Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
What's up, buds?
Welcome back to Draper's Rick Radio. I'm your host, Greg Young. And today, we got a three-man call because we have Corey Snyder in the building. And I'm here with Corey and Adam. So, Corey, we'll start with the guest first. How have you been doing today?
I've been doing fine, staying busy, catching up on a lot of the teams that I didn't watch much of in October.
Oh, that makes sense. That makes sense. And hopefully we'll get some messages from your dog. They're very important, you know. So we have a high dog tolerance here on Draper's Rick Radio. Perfect. Right. Thank you. Wow. It's almost like I had this planned. All right. Well, so String, how are you doing?
Doing well. Doing better than the Caps in the third period of their game against Florida.
That's yeah. Awesome. All right. Well, I'm going to toss that right back to you, String, and then Corey, we'll kind of transition to you from there. But the Caps last night, they were cruising along. They were up 4-1 against a dominant Florida Panthers team. And then everything went wrong at once. And they proceeded to give up three goals, get outshot, I think by like 28 or something insane like that. And then give up four goals to not even get a point out of the game. So, String, kind of what did you see in the game and kind of what went wrong for the Caps there?
Well, you know, the Capitals started well and they got some somewhat lucky goals, I'd say. I mean, McMichael bouncing the puck off of Bobrovsky's back, I thought was fortunate. Great idea. But, you know, how often does that work out? And then they played against the Panthers showed up in the third period. I mean, this is a team that's near the top of the NHL, 33 points, 12-1 at home. It's just kind of tough. The Capitals were due for a bad period. I mean, I'm not reading into it too much. Granted, it was one of the worst periods I think they've had in a couple of years. But it's going to happen, especially with an aging core that's had to play a lot of minutes with their entire second line being out for an extended period of time.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess, Corey, you watch a lot of hockey. So I'm going to give you the unenviable task of giving Capitals fans. I think I saw some rather panicked reactions to the loss, which is, I think, understandable when you watch 20 minutes of absolute frustration, but also maybe he doesn't fit super well with like way the Capitals have played this year. And also, I think the other thing that's worth knowing, and I'm sure you can kind of elaborate on this, is that teams blow leads sometimes. That's just kind of the way hockey works sometimes. So I don't know, like, should Capitals say, I'm gonna ask an absurd hypothetical, like an absurd question, and I think you can give an appropriately absurd response. Should the Capitals panic based on the results of one bad period against the Florida Panthers, one of the better teams in hockey?
I mean, I would say they need to panic. I mean, I guess you could be worried about it if you're thinking about hockey in May or whatever, but I don't know. That's kind of what everyone except Tampa Bay Lightning fans are worried about hockey in May, like as far as the team is going to do, because that's pretty much like the one team that's the master of locking everybody down when they have a lead. But this is kind of just what happens. There's a lot of teams. There's just a lot of teams now that are so similar and so close to each other, at least like going by what I've watched. Like there's a lot of teams hovering around in that 50-52 expected goals range, a lot of them kind of playing the same way. Florida is a team that absolutely pounds their opponents when they're down in the third period. I don't know. It's kind of a byproduct of like the shot counter in Florida, because they do kind of overcount things there. But I did watch that game last night, and that was just domination. But Florida's done that to a lot of teams. Like that's just kind of how they play. I mean, I am a little worried about them because they do fall behind a little bit, but they can come back better than most teams.
Yeah.
And Washington, like I thought they did an okay job at the road during the road trip of sort of keeping things under control, considering like the roster they were working with. Like in that LA game, they played really well. The Seattle game was kind of a disaster, but against Carolina, that's kind of how a lot of Hurricanes games have gone too, where it's like they dominate for 20 minutes. Sometimes they get rewarded, sometimes they don't. And there's just like a 3-minute stretch where things just go off the rails and they find themselves either tied in a game they were dominating or down 2-1 and they got to climb back out of it. So I don't know. What I've been seeing hasn't really been too different from like the rest of the league, at least as far as like blowing leads are concerned. And I mean, you look at where they are now, they're a pretty good team in terms of expected goals. They're not a dominant team, but they're outscoring their problems right now. So I think they'll be fine, like when all is said and done, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think they will be too. I mean, they, you know, you look at, you know, getting two road games against Carolina and Florida, you know, with just a day apart in between the two. And you're like, all right, like, You get 2 points out of four in that, you're not hating your life, and you know, they will move on just fine. But I guess Corey, kind of while you were on the Capitals depth a little bit, I think that's been something we've all kind of, I'm not going to lead the podcast talking about Alex Ovechkin, although I promise we'll talk about him a little bit. But you know, that's been something that's been really striking, I think, in the last week or so, has been the Capitals depth, actually more than the last week, really pretty much the whole year, with them being without a second line and everything. But I guess I'm kind of curious, like, what do we think about, like, the organizational strength of a team like the Capitals? Because, I mean, you look at some of these players like, you know, Protas or Beck Malenstein, I think is everyone's kind of favorite example right now of just, you know, guys that kind of just came out of nowhere and maybe are good and at minimum seem to fit really well with what the Capitals are doing. So I don't know, what is it about Washington that kind of just keep finding and developing these players? And, you know, you look at other teams and they just kind of seem to struggle when they have top players go out.
Yeah, who does this remind you of? Like, like the whole Mark Donk, Buzz Flippett thing in Pittsburgh. They just call up anybody and they have 15 goals at the end of the year.
Yep.
But yeah, like this is kind of just what Washington does. They just find guys. Like some of them you kind of expect it from. Like Connor McMichael was a pretty high pick. He's really young, and he's had a really good like rookie under the radar season. Like he doesn't have the goals like Lucas Raymond or some of the other guys, but he's really good, and I think he could be like a not a Calder pick, but like low in the. But he might get some votes if he keeps it up. But I don't know. It's just it could just be like the environment they're walking into, which even then I'm not sure of, because they're playing with like Nick Dowd as their or Lars Eller as like their second most experienced center right now.
Yeah.
So like I don't know what it is, but you look at the players they have. It's like Kuznetsov is a top line player. Lars Eller, very good player. Nick Dowd, like fourth liner, but a very good fourth liner. Like these guys aren't totally walking into.
they're not like walking into the NHL like totally out of their league. They have guys they can kind of lean on and rely on. Like sometimes Oshie's healthy, sometimes he's not. Like Ovechkin, Wilson, like all the guys that they kind of just can lean on people. But I think just Washington does a really good job at just insulating these guys so they can kind of find their way one way or another. It's like that kid they called it. They're really, I get these two guys. I get Leeson and Protas mixed up.
Yeah. Protas is the really big one that's been played with Ovechkin. Although I guess they're both really big. But yeah, Protas has been on the top line.
Yeah, like I was gonna say they're really tall guy, but they're both really tall. It's like I don't know, really like it's interesting because like I watched the guy, I'm like, yeah, this guy can't really move, but he's in the right spot usually to kind of make a quick bump pass to Wilson or Ovechkin, or he's like behind the net to kind of win a puck battle and get the puck to the point so like their defensemen kind of cycle down and do their thing, which they've been doing a lot of this year. I think they've been kind of getting more comfortable with that, but that's another conversation.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just kind of just the system they're walking into. They're set up in a place where they're not really like kind of they just don't look lost, you know?
Yeah. Like,
they're not dominating games, but like they can kind of find their niche. Like Protas has been a pretty good defensive player, and he's been playing Kuznetsov's spot in the power play and kind of taking up space down low to free up some. Like I was watching the Montreal game from last week, and it's just interesting how these guys just kind of find a way to fit in, even if they're not like directly impacting the play. Cause there is that goal Carlson scored in the power play where he had like a million feet of room to just walk into a shot, but Kuznetsov spot down low. And Kuznetsov had the puck on the right wall, and Protas just went to the front of the net and took a hab there with him. And the other guy, I think it was Paquette, had a stick in the lane, and that just left a million feet open for Carlson to just walk into a shot and blast one. He's like one of the few guys that can score from there. So I don't know. These guys just seem to know what they're doing when they get called up. Like they understand their assignments. They don't look lost. They have guys they can lean on. So I think it goes a long way just having the top of your roster set so you're not just throwing young kids into the fire.
Yeah, and I mean, String, I think if you kind of look at the Caps from a kind of broader standpoint too, they seem to do well in terms of drafting and developing, right? Like you look at Caps first round picks and yeah, like they've missed on a couple, you know, but I think they have a, you know, pretty good track record of either developing guys that can, you know, slot into the lineup or, you know, being able to develop guys that then trade them for other guys that can slot into the lineup. So I don't know. It seems like String, they've done well, I think, from an organizational standpoint in terms of developing these kind of players, no?
I mean, we for years have kind of touted the Capitals and how they're able to develop young players, and I think we're seeing rewards for that now. And it's not the flashy guys, right? The Capitals haven't had a lot of flashy top tier picks, like a Connor McMichael, over the last few years, or not how they were doing them in the early 2000s, right? Or early 2010s. The Capitals went years and years where they would have that kind of late first round draft pick and get, you know, Marcus Johansson, Evgeny Kuznetsov, Burakovsky, an earlier pick, Jacob Vrana. And, you know, now we're kind of seeing these depth guys that are able to play up in the lineup, but not necessarily with that skill set contribute. And that's really nice to see. For a long time, the Capitals talked about how they wanted to have an organizational mentality inclusive of Hershey, where, you know, they played similar styles, similar systems. I remember that being a conversation that took place a lot during Barry Trotz's introduction. To be frank, I don't really know if that's still the case, but it certainly looks that way given how these guys from Hershey have been able to slide into the lineup and be effective immediately.
Yeah, and it's interesting, you know, because I think sometimes as a fan, you could kind of just look at like the AHL team's record or something, right? And you could be, oh, well, they're really good, so that's got to be a good sign of our future. But I think that can be maybe an overly simplistic way to view it because, I think like it or not, you know, and I'm guessing some of the teams that have AHL teams probably don't like this very much. But from the Capital standpoint, they need the Hershey Bears to be developing talent for the Washington Capitals. Right. That is the job of the Hershey Bears. And, you know, so I think if sometimes you've seen in previous years, the Capitals kind of or the Hershey Bears in particular, kind of play older players to win games. And, you know, that there's obviously a difference there between what the Capitals need and what the Hershey Bears need. So I think it's definitely been interesting that I think the last few years, it seems like they've, I know that they've made some changes to Hershey, and I think it's seen, you're starting to maybe see the ramifications of that. And Corey, speaking of one guy who was a Hershey Bear briefly for a year and who has come up to Washington and really dominated, I know you wanted to talk about Connor McMichael. So let's talk about Connor McMichael. I think that I know before we had started talking, before we hit record, that I had said that he maybe wasn't the kind of, I mean, he's been great, and he wasn't the kind of great that I thought he would be. He's been a lot, I think, more physical. I think he's been, I expected a pure sniper kind of guy, but actually you look at most of his goals, and they're not snipery goals. They're kind of ugly goals up front, and it's definitely been, he's an interesting guy to watch, because I think the underlying numbers say one thing, too, and I think his play kind of speaks to that. But kind of what are you seeing with Connor McMichael this year?
Yeah, there's always something to be said about a prospect that doesn't have to lead the charge on his line, or just a guy you call up and he's an NHLer right then and there. Because I feel like it with a lot of these kids, sometimes it takes a while for them to really get their feet set and like kind of stick in the NHL. With McMichael, he just looked like he belonged from the beginning. They had him on a really good line with Oshie and Mantha, I think it was, in October. And he was just he was like an excellent third wheel on that line. He was making plays along the wall to get them space off the rush. He was camped out, like he was doing stuff like kept being camped out of the blue line to create easy entries for them so they can kind of get set up. And he's just, I don't know, he just gets it. Like he just knows how to read off his line mates well. He can play really any role because he doesn't really need to be like, he doesn't need to be a star, a guy who has the puck all the time to be effective. He can just do a lot of the simple things like go to the net and make short passes to the more skilled line mates. And he's just done a really good job of that. Like you said, he's been really good about getting to the net and kind of just getting those, like whether it's like a fluky goal or just like a screen or a tip or something. Like he just kind of really knows, like he just looks. Like he doesn't look lost out there. He just look like he just definitely looks like he belongs.
Yeah, I think your dog agrees with you.
Yeah, I kind of go like, I don't know. Like it's like what we talked about at the beginning of the year. There's always a guy or two on the Caps that just kind of keeps the window open. And like it was Burakovsky and it was Verana a few years ago. And I was like, oh, do they have a guy like that? It might be Connor McMichael because he's probably the guy with the highest ceiling. And lo and behold, he's an NHLer right now at like 20 years old, which like he might not be a star yet, but what he's doing now is definitely like a good sign of what he can be like when he gets some more minutes and some more responsibility. Like maybe he is the guy that can maybe take over for Backstrom or Kuznetsov like in a few years, which is obviously not going to be as good as Nicholas Backstrom because like that's a Hall of Famer we're talking about here. But definitely is like the 1A, 1BC for or center for them soon.
If he means that Nicholas Backstrom can do 20% less, then that is indeed a valuable player now.
Yeah, and also, I mean, I do like that he can kind of place both center and wing and not just be totally lost out of his way. Because, like, sometimes I think that's overblown because everything is just so F1, F2 now when you get into the offensive zone. But they've moved him around a lot and he really hasn't seen his play dip. And I know a lot of players when they get moved up, it's like when they get moved to center, they're like overly concerned about where they need to be in the defensive zone. And like they kind of struggle a little bit with that. But with him, it's like, really, he really hasn't seen his play dip at all, regardless of where he's played.
Yeah, no, it's definitely been interesting to kind of watch him. And String, have there been any other kind of rookies that have caught your eye? I know at some point I'm going to ask Corey about Ferravari, but anyone kind of caught your eye has been, oh, you know, that yet another Capital that they seem to develop.
Let me think about that for a second. I mean, Ferravari's a pretty clear one. I thought he's been good. To be honest, the other guys, I think they played well, but they're not really standing out to me at this point in time as more than kind of a stopgap. Protas has looked good, and I think there's potential there. But, you know, there's nobody that's jumping out to me as a,
hey, it's definitely time to make sure that these guys are sticking around at the lineup. As much as it seems like much of the fan base is ready to move on from Carl Hagelin, I'm not quite
Peter
sure.
Peter LaViolette is not ready to move on.
No, yeah. I've got Carl Hagelin is stapled to the bench rather than the press box.
Yeah, Corey, I heard you go, yeah. I don't know. Let's use this, and then if you want to say anything about Carl Hagelin, you are more than welcome to. Although my thoughts about Carl Hagelin are not particularly voluminous at this point. But I know we'd been DMing a little bit about Martin Ferravari and kind of the Capitals' defense, and I know in years past we've talked about how LaViolette has used the Capitals' defensemen and how they're, you know, very kind of aggressive on forecheck and kind of pinching and everything like that. And I guess it seems like Ferravari has kind of fit well into what LaViolette wants his defensemen to do, no?
Yeah, he does, especially when it comes to, like, defending entries. He's always just kind of stapled to, like, 2 feet within the blue line. And I thought he struggled a little bit, like, early in the season, a few guys walked around him. But, like, as the year went on, he got way more comfortable just kind of playing aggressive and high in the zone. And he's been really good at, like, using his stick to deny entries and just disrupt plays in general. And they always want a very basic, by-the-books defenseman with John Carlson. And I think he's a really good compliment to him because, like, Carlson... He's like he has a lot of his issues, especially in the defensive zone. But one of the things he is really good at is just like turning loose pucks into transition chances, yes. Which is like it's very feast or famine type of defense, which is why his numbers are kind of scattered. But Ferravari is a guy who can kind of create a lot more loose pucks for him. So the Caps can kind of go work on offense a little bit.
It's definitely a better fit than Brendan Dillon.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think he's what Brendan Dillon used to be, like a few years ago, like when the Sharks had him, he was kind of Brent Burns' stabilizer, if you want to call it that. But he is like, he is pretty much like your basic. I don't want to say shutdown defenseman, but or defensive defenseman, just because I think it's kind of an oxymoron. But he's a very by the books, and he's just there to kind of disrupt and stop plays, and like teams need that.
Sure.
I mean, I will say though, I do think what I do worry about with him is that he is very by the books. Like he knows what to do. He understands like the assignments, but he also kind of just sticks to it. There was that Bennett chance last night where he was like wide open. Florida got like 3 shots out of it. And
yeah.
I think the Caps are, I don't know if they were playing man exactly, because I'm usually wrong with this, but he's following, Florida had a cycle going with a bunch of defensemen jumping in, and Ferravari's following Gustav Forsling to the blue line, while Wilson gets kind of crossed up, and he didn't really know who to follow, and that left Bennett wide open. So I think he could do a little better just kind of reading and reacting of the play instead of just following, like, whatever the system is. Because, like... I mean, that'll probably just come with time because he's still pretty young, but he's doing what the Caps need him to do right now.
Yeah, and that makes sense. And String, speaking of two Capitals defensemen that are doing what they need to do right now, if you don't start talking about how good Dmitry Orlov and Nick Jensen is, I will start doing it. But I'm the host, so I'll let you do it. What have you been seeing out of those two?
Well, JP did kind of tweet out that kind of who are the best offensive defensemen in this year from a statistical point of view. And Dmitry Orlov, lo and behold, right near the top of the list. I think we all thought it would be Nick Jensen, of course, not John.
You mean Norris Jensen, of course. Right?
Exactly. But it's been a great year for Dmitry Orlov. I mean, I've always been a fan of his. He's very dependable, and that frankly, there's a lot to be said for that. I mean, he's a guy who he's one of those great traditional two-way defensemen, not afraid to lay the body. I mean, there's nothing I can say about him that the routine listeners to the show haven't heard already, but a lot to be happy about when analyzing Dmitry Orlov's play to start the season.
Yeah, and Corey, I know that I don't think it was your micro stats that they used, which kind of felt like betrayal. But I know Dom wrote something recently about kind of using micro stats with defensemen, and I mean Dmitry Orlov again featured pretty highly in there. So I know I've poked around your site, and it seems like that's always the guy that people analytics nerds like me and micro stat and analytics nerds like you seem to say, yeah, that's a guy that really kind of drives a lot for the Capitals, no?
Yeah, that's how it's always been. He's been, like, it's kind of an extreme comparison, but, like, in Nashville, Laviolette have Roman Josi to kind of, like, defer to get the puck out of the zone and lead the charge if they want someone to carry the puck in. And that's what he has been. That's pretty much what he has always been. He's, like, also allowed John Carlson to play in a more like sheltered 1A 1B role, because Orlov and like whatever right defenseman they find can just handle the shutdown minutes. It was Niskanen for a long time. Now it's Nick Jensen. And what's interesting is like I've kind of changed my my tracking of zone exits this year. So it's more based on who retrieves the puck to beat a forecheck first instead of just getting the puck out of the zone. And Nick Jensen has been really good so far in that. Like he's been excellent at about taking hits to make plays, getting like beating forecheck pressures, getting the puck out of the zone with control.
Yes. He was good at that in Detroit too. And then it kind of went away from him in DC. And then now I think he's found his comfort.
Yeah, he was when they were going through that rough transition period, like he was probably their best guy for a really long time. Or not probably like more like 1 or 2 years, just because it really hasn't been that long since Detroit's been terrible.
Well, no, I remember back in my Michigan days, I remember seeing him in Detroit and thinking, yeah, you know, that's a guy that is really, really, really good at one thing, which is getting the puck out of the defensive zone and into the neutral zone. And that sounds overly simplistic, but I mean, that's a really valuable skill for defensemen to have.
Yeah, it's interesting, like, when you think of offensive defensemen, because, like, I've kind of been, like, changing my viewpoint of this, because I really, like, the more, like, I've watched games, it's, like, the less I want a defenseman to kind of have the play run through him. I'd rather just have a guy who can relieve pressure, go back, retrieve pucks, get it out of the zone, make the other team come 200 feet, and lead the offense if he needs to. Because I feel like that's just kind of where the game is now. Like, you don't really need, like, a big hulking defenseman to just kill guys in front of the net. And, like, the play for the most part now is, like, on the boards in the corners in the neutral zone. And, like, Jensen is really good at doing, like, really good at controlling that.
Yeah. And, I think I think the Vancouver Canucks are an attestation to teams that when they don't have guys that can do that effectively, what can happen? I guess String, the other thing is I would feel remiss without talking about the Capitals power play and how it's not very good. So I don't know, like, I've asked JP about this, I've asked different people about this, like, what do you think is going on with them? Do you think it's just as simple as they're missing two of their pivotal cogs in Oshie and Backstrom, or do you think there's something else going on?
It's a good question. One that if I had a great answer to, I wouldn't be talking to you. I'd be getting paid lots of money by the NHL teams. But,
well, you are extremely well compensated doing this podcast, sir.
Yes. It's a labor of love, and nothing's better than getting that sort of compensation. But I don't know, Greg. I mean, when I watch the Capitals power play right now, it just looks lackluster to me. You know, how many years did we say all the problems Kuznetsov on the entries? How it's the slingshot. Kuznetsov's probably playing the best hockey that he's played in 3 years, definitely in 3 years. I mean, he has been, you know, knock on wood, consistently dominant so far. I mean, he's many nights been the best player on the Caps, which is saying something given how well Ovechkin's been playing. So I'm not sure it's a personnel issue. They just don't look good. I mean, the power play has been kind of falling over the last few years. They're no longer kind of that 25% top tier power play. but I actually don't have a great answer for you. What sort of answer are you thinking, Greg?
That's a good question. You know, I think that it, you know, I think JP is definitely on to something when he says, look, like Nicholas Backstrom has been one of the great like power play passers of really the last like 10 years or so, right? And yeah. I think anytime you have a guy like that, you know, that's tough to lose. And, you know, I think that the people that the Capitals have replaced him with haven't been great. I mean, you look at it like right now, they've been insistent on having Protas in the power play, right? Before that, it was Connor Sherry. And, you know, I think that I don't know that there's a coherent vision to how to make an effective power play without Nicholas Backstrom. I think is kind of where I'm at with it right now. Like, I think that, but then again, I mean, you're right that the power play was struggling before Nicholas Backstrom was out too. You know, I mean, we've seen a slow erosion kind of the last 5 years or so, I would say. I don't know, Corey, you watch other teams also. Like, what do you think's going on with the Caps right now with that?
Yeah, I think one of the problems right now is that it's kind of just too based on structure, just because they've been doing it the same way for so long. It's typical 1-3-1 setup, and they just kind of plug and place guys into different roles. It's like, oh, we'll just have a righty shot in the slot to replace Oshie. So here's Tom Wilson. Here's Kuznetsov to replace Backstrom on the right wall.
Here's not Connor McMichael, and instead Connor Sherry.
That was interesting. I'm kind of surprised he hasn't really seen much power play time, just because injuries are a problem, because it's kind of Kuznetsov or nobody. And I thought that LaPierre kid might have stayed up, because he was actually pretty good at doing that on the power play, at least in the few games I tracked when he was there. But I do think there just needs to be more, like, they need to allow guys to improvise a little more. I think there needs to be more movement, because right now, with Protas and Kuznetsov on that right wall, they don't really move around a lot. Whereas with Backstrom, they rotate it a lot. And sure. Protas is either going to stay behind the net or go to the front of the net. And they kind of did the same thing when I'm trying to remember who was there before Protas. I think it was Connor Sherry.
Yep.
And like Sherry didn't really rotate at all, because like Sherry's one thing is scoring in front of the net and working in tight spaces, and teams kind of know what he's going to do. So I do think there needs to be more. If they're going to do that, I think they need to move around a lot more, improvise a lot more, get out of the 1-3-1 setup. Because like this, like Tampa Bay does that a lot. Tampa Bay will kind of, if it's not working, they'll kind of like draw things up in the dirt and just create something off a loose play, or just send the puck to the other side of the ice if there's too much pressure on one side, and kind of just go from there, because that's going to create openings. Maybe even just go to a more of like, not really dump and chase, more of like a forechecking power play. Because in the playoffs last year against Carolina, Tampa Bay actually didn't score any goals off like any traditional setups. It was all off of broken plays and missed clears by the Hurricanes.
Sure.
And a couple off entries too, which I think teams need to do more of. But the Caps, I don't know why Kuznetsov and the entries just don't work, but for whatever reason, they don't. So,
well, and it's interesting too, because I think like that would fit a more kind of forecheck heavy style. That would arguably, I think, fit more with what Laviolette wants the Caps to do at 5v5. No, so I think it would at least give some consistency to it.
Yeah, because like he can do that at 5v5. I just don't understand why it's never, like, this isn't really a Caps problem. It's a problem of like league wide, because teams just don't, like, except for Dallas here and there, like teams just don't attack off the rush on the power play. Mostly because like teams are set up at the blue line Red Rover style, so it's a little tough. But if you got four guys standing still there, you might be able to catch a few guys off guard or something. Like the Flyers and some other teams have been using the boards a lot this year to create chances on the power play out of nothing. So I do think they need to kind of just break the structure a little bit, go outside the box, maybe attack off the rush more. Definitely try to create more loose pucks and more turnovers, fail clears, which easier said than done, just because like it's easier said than done because like teams are like so good at penalty killing now, except for Vancouver, that most pucks just go down. Most pucks get out of the zone. When I watched the Islanders last year, their power play was just terrible, except for the times when Barzal can kind of just create something out of nothing. And maybe that's what Washington needs to do with Kuznetsov, because he's probably the one guy who's healthy right now that can do that.
Yeah. He's the game breaker kind of there with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I guess, I mean, I think we'll before break, we're going to, I'm going to ask Corey and Adam one more question, then we're going to take a break. And then, I think Strig is going to go off to the wilderness here a little bit. And I'm going to talk with Corey about some NHL wide questions, but, I guess, and Corey, I'll start this with you, and then we'll get String in here. Like, I want to ask you about the Caps' top line. I know JP has written about this recently, that basically their top line has been so good that they've basically produced two – at least their top line at 5v5, of course, has basically produced the equivalent of two lines. That's how good particularly – I mean, we're at, like, resurgent Evgeny Kuznetsov is a thing now. Like, I guess, Corey, you're the MicroStat guy. What are you seeing with Kuznetsov? Do you think it's kind of – I mean, I know we all want to talk about Ovechkin and how great he is, and he is, and he's been phenomenal. But I guess it seems to me like just from watching it, you know, the Kuznetsov play and really driving it has really both helped improve him and really, I think, resuscitated because that's not the right word, but really, you know, kind of added an extra boost to Ovechkin's season, no?
Yeah, it really has. And what's interesting is like I'm looking at his stats now and the main thing is everything he touches turns into a scoring chance. And like he
That's
doesn't
pretty good.
Well, like he doesn't have a lot of offense and volume as far as producing shots go. It's just every single thing he had, like over 50% of the shots he produces are scoring chances, which I mean, part of that is a little unsustainable, obviously, but there are guys who can do this. And like, I mean, the one guy who did it last year was that Erickson Ek kid in Arizona, I mean, in Minnesota.
Oh, yeah, he was, like, weirdly phenomenal at dinner. That, actually.
Yeah, and he was kind of doing that just from being around the net all the time, not allowing anything defensively, whereas, like, Kuznetsov is just a total wizard in transition, which is he's gotten back to this year. And he's just insanely good about just creating space for himself out of nothing. And for whatever reason, like, I swear to God, when he has the puck in the neutral zone, it's like there's a halo around him. Yeah. Like, guys just don't want to hit him. They don't want to go near him because
his
like
skating and puck handling, it's just different. You know what
I mean?
Well,
it's like the second a guy takes a stride at him, he finds somebody wide open. Yeah. And that's how it's been going this year, especially off the rush. Like, and
or, I mean, even shorthanded, like he had a gorgeous setup. On
that
the
was,
the
yeah, that was absolutely ridiculous. Like, yeah, he had 10 seconds to skate around in the neutral zone shorthanded with like, that should not happen in the NHL. That happens in the NHL. Like, that was absolutely ridiculous. Like, it's the ability to create things like that. And, like, as far as, like, creating, like, the big stat that I track that I kind of follow throughout the year is creating chances off zone entries because those are the toughest to kind of create. They're the toughest to create, and they're the hardest to defend. And, like, Kuznetsov and McMichael have been the two drivers there for Washington this year. And, like, that goes a long way if you're getting, especially in games when you're getting outplayed, like, a guy who can kind of just draw something up in the dirt and score a goal off the rush, like, that's your lifeline. And that's enough to win you a lot of games in the regular season.
Yeah, and, you know, once we get to the playoffs, you know, then it's kind of everything. Who the hell knows what's going to happen? But String, like, I kind of want to tie the Kuznetsov to Ovechkin thing here a little bit. I mean, like, I look at that line and I say, wow. I mean, obviously, you know, they've had Wilson, they've had Protas, yada yada. But I look at, you know, Ovechkin's kind of particularly the dominance he's had at 5v5 this year and think, wow, you know, thank goodness we have a resurgence of getting Kuznetsov, and it might, you know, if work well together, that might get Ovechkin a long way to Gretzky, no?
I mean, obviously, anytime you've got a center that's creating space and able to hit you with the puck, you're going to be more likely to score, right? So, especially with Backstrom kind of slowing down a bit, it'd be nice to kind of maybe put Backstrom with some quicker players once he is healthy. And Ovechkin can kind of stay with a guy like Kuznetsov, who is just so nimble on his feet and able to move. I mean, the big thing is Kuznetsov's a space creator, and he does that via his skating. Backstrom's able to find you in space kind of just with his great passes. But, I mean, I think that Ovi's in great shape if Kuznetsov keeps playing like he's playing. I mean, it's shocking that Ovechkin's scoring like he is with a power play that's only clicking at 18%. So,
yeah.
Certainly a good thing for him.
Yep, Agreed. All right. Well, with that, we're going to take a quick break. On the other side, I have some Jack Hughes and other related questions for Corey. So stay tuned. Welcome back to Japers Drunk Radio. I am now here solo with Corey. And Corey, with just the two of us, we're going to talk about some non-cap stuff because, you know, this is so everyone that is has their caps fill, you know, we gave it to you for the first 37 minutes, you know, so we're going to talk about some other stuff now. First off, like, let's you're a Carolina guy. Carolina's really good again this year. I'm going to sigh. Tony D'Angelo is playing very well this year. But I don't know, like, it seems like Carolina, obviously somewhat led by goaltending, but they always seem to drive play. This year, they haven't quite driven play to the same extent, although lately they've really picked it up. But I don't know, kind of what are you saying about Carolina? And do you think ultimately this is the team that's going to probably still win the division this year?
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to win the division just because things are so tight at the top right now, and they've kind of hit a skids. They kind of hit the skids a little bit on this.
Yeah, that was a tough loss to Dallas, huh?
Yeah, recent road trips, losing that game in regulation to Washington was also kind of tough. But what's different about the team this year is they're scoring at 5-on-5, and that's just been huge. And it's been a bunch of guys doing it. Like Jesper Foss leads the team in 5-on-5 goals. Kotkaniemi has 5 goals, and he was on the quote-unquote fourth line for a while. And, like, it's not just all Aho this year for once at 5-on-5. But they were getting bailed out big time by Freddie Anderson for, like, at least 2 months. Because, like, defensively, this team isn't really as good as a lot of people think they are. They're kind of middle of the pack in terms of, like, expected goals given up. But they're only giving up like less than 2 goals a game at 5-on-5, and most of that is because Freddie Anderson's just been outstanding, and he's been making a lot of really difficult saves look really easy, like especially on plays that go across the seam, It's like he knows they're coming and he's already there to kind of just square up and take it.
Yeah.
So that's really been what's put them at the top of the division. Because, like, if he was just, like, 10% less, I think they're kind of in a dogfight with the Rangers and the Caps for first place.
Yeah.
But really, the 5-on-5 scoring has been the big driver of this team this year. That and goaltending. And the fact that it's all just – it's not the Sebastian Aho show, like, all the time now at 5-on-5 is also a big deal. Because he's kind of been – a lot of his points are on the power play this year. Same with Teuvo Teravainen. And just getting just as much secondary scoring as they have from guys who really didn't produce that much last year, and from a rookie and Seth Jarvis, is like, that's been a big deal.
Yeah, they really found something in that Seth Jarvis. I was impressed by him against the Caps. They kind of found something there, huh?
Yeah, it's like what I said with McMichael. It's like a guy just comes up and you can already tell he belongs. Like, he doesn't need to be the star in his line. He can just be a third wheel on a top line or a second line and just fit in fine and do a lot of the tertiary secondary things that help you stick around, just winning puck battles, getting to rebounds, which has kind of been his niche, kind of being a support guy on entries, and just like feeding off the skill that your top line players bring.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. Yeah. That's it's definitely something to kind of keep an eye on. Yeah. They're definitely interesting. Speaking of interesting things, I think there's been a kind of interesting debate that I've seen on Twitter and in general over the extension for Jack Hughes, because Jack Hughes is someone that I guess I'm going to try to lay out the terms of, I think, what the debate has been, and feel free to correct me if I get these wrong. And then I'm kind of curious where you end up, because I think you and I end up in slightly different places, but I trust your opinion more than mine. So Jack Hughes, he gets an eight-year, $8 million contract extension by the New Jersey Devils that I think buys out either it's like 3 to 4 years of UFA status or something like that. I think it's definitely at least 2 or 3. So the kind of debate with Jack Hughes at this point is he has, one, been hurt a lot. Obviously, the first overall pick and a very high pedigree, and his underlying stats, particularly last year, were excellent. Like, uniformly excellent, but he hasn't really scored yet. And, you know, you look at the contract and you're like, okay, why do this now? Why give this kind of term, or, well, I guess less term and more kind of $8 million for a guy that just hasn't kind of produced and shown necessarily that he'd drive a top line. So I guess I'm kind of curious. I think you could look at this contract and say, all right, if he develops into the number 1A center that we all think he can and all think, you know, maybe you say there's like a 70 to 80% chance he'll get there, then this is a great value contract still. But at the same time, you look like there's some RFA years they're buying out that they are probably paying over market for if they had just done a bridge. So I guess, I don't know, kind of break down the contract a little. Kind of where do you think the Devils are? And, you know, if you wouldn't have given this contract, kind of what would you have been at for a reasonable number that he could have ended up at?
It's an interesting contract to me because if you're paying a guy that much, especially when he's only 20 years old, usually it's like, you know, this guy like is amazing. It's like Austin Matthews or something. You want to pay him under market value for a guy you know is a star. And I guess the Devils know Jack Hughes is a star. It's just the points haven't really shown it. So I thought they could have gotten him for, if they're going to sign him now, that is, I thought they can get him for like less money because like, let's just say he has an amazing season this year, like the pucks start going in for him and like his line mates start finishing more and he's like, say, a 70-point player. Like, I feel like you're still going to pay him about $80 million a year. I mean, yeah. About $1 million a year. Like, are you afraid of paying him $10 million or something? So, like, I know it's different now. Like, the Habs just gave Suzuki that big contract, but he was just coming off a playoff run. So that's kind of boosting things there, but it was kind of an odd deal. Like, it's very unprecedented too, I feel like, because sure. Never there hasn't been a guy with this type of point production this young who has ever made this much money. Because I asked on Twitter, like, has this really ever happened before? And I got a few answers. Like, Barkov got a pretty big contract like in his second year, but he had 53 points and he was getting only like $6 million. Granted, the cap is higher now, but still, like,
that would project still probably around $7 million, not $8 million for Hughes, huh?
Yeah, so like definitely, I don't want to say they overpay because I think at the end of the day, this is just going to be it's a deal where they're probably going to pay fair value unless Jack Hughes is like, say, Patrick Kane 2.0 or something this year, which
or if he's hurt all the time, which you can't really project.
Which, like, I mean, Hughes is also just a very, I mean, he's a unicorn. Like, if you just watching him and just seeing like how much the play runs through him, how much he has the puck on his stick when he's out there, and just how he's a one-man show whenever he's on the ice. It's just that he doesn't have the points. Like, and is that his fault? Is that the line mate's fault? I don't really know for sure. Is it because
I mean, you look at it, it's not like he's played with a ton of elite talent, right? But at the same time, you know, like
Wayne Simmonds. And,
yeah, exactly. But I mean, at the same time, you know, like, it's the NHL, it's a capped parity-driven league, right? You know, like, if you're going to pay someone that, you're going to probably need them to play with maybe a couple of guys that, you know, you're going to need him to drive a line like that.
Yeah, it's just maybe, I feel like there has to be some kind of in-between, but they also had some tough luck last year. Janssen couldn't finish at all, and now Andreas Janssen looks like the player that they traded for. Tomas Tatar is a very good player. Jesper Bratt's a very good player.
Yeah, weirdly had an incredible year.
Yeah, he's starting to see his points go up, and Dawson Mercer looks legit, so, like, I guess they're banking on him being the guy. Well, I mean, he has been the guy, it's just the points haven't been there. And I guess they're banking on the points coming, but what exactly is the cap on this? Like, yeah. I mean, if Hughes is your franchise guy and you're paying him $8 million for the next 8 years, that's good. And it's just kind of a weird time to do it, you know, and they're just kind of assuming that everything is going to go right. So it's just an interesting contract, really. Like I said, it's unprecedented because really there hasn't been a guy this young with that type of point production who got this type of contract before, except maybe, I guess, Ryan Nugent Hopkins, but he also had a really good rookie season. Like, I think he had 50 something points. So that's also, Hughes hasn't produced like that before.
No, yeah, you know, it kind of reminds me, I think it was it Darnell Nurse or whatever, right, that the Edmonton gave that huge contract to, and you're like, why do you have to do this now? You don't
Yeah,
have
even, to. Well, even then, like, Nurse had, I think Nurse led
he had like a gazillion points last year. You know? Yeah. Passing but the puck to Connor McDavid on the power play. We'll do that. Well, that's not totally fair, but.
I guess if Jack Hughes is like the second coming of Patrick Kane, then yeah, this is a steal for New Jersey, but I think at most this is just him. This is just the Devils paying like fair market value for their future star player, which it's fine. It's just kind of weird.
I mean, I guess the other thing, kind of pure hockey analytics aside, is maybe you say, look, like, do we? I guess it doesn't. Obviously, you wouldn't say that this mattered at all for like a Nathan MacKinnon or something. But, you know, if he's going to be our franchise player, do we necessarily want him to feel like he's, you know, this incredible value that's underpaid, you know, and all that? I mean, I don't know, you wonder maybe if there's like another kind of consideration like that at play.
Yeah, I guess it's also like they just don't want to nickel and dime their star player, which I mean, fair. If you can get the kid locked up now, then. If you can get the guy locked up now for like a decent term, a decent money, then by all means do it instead of like potentially letting this drag into a messy situation in a few months.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, I think you would definitely say you'd want to at least buy out a couple of years versus having to give Jack Hughes a bridge, no?
Yeah, definitely, because I feel like that was the direction a lot of teams were going to go with like the Austin Matthews contract. And him only getting a few years, and then the Aho offer sheet, that's pretty much a bridge deal too. So it's interesting, even though I'm not saying like points are everything with Hughes, but like points are what teams usually pay for.
Yes. Yeah. You know, and so it's interesting. You know, I think it's also interesting because of, like you said, kind of what it says about, I mean, like we see these kind of swings, right? I mean, you mentioned it, you know, with you know, maybe some of the guys that have gotten shorter bridge deals, you know, that I think this is just, there's not anything kind of like this. And I think it's interesting about what it says to the Devils too, because, you know, I think if you're the Devils, you can on one hand say, look, we have this guy for 8 years. We know that he's going to be in the middle of the lineup, assuming he's healthy and all that, you know, which we can't really count for. And that's, there's value just inherent in that. But at the same time, you know, if you could have gotten those $2 million extra and that means a tangibly worse player that he has to play with, then, you know, maybe that doesn't do you any good.
Yeah, that's definitely fair.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, okay.
Like, I remember the big question or heading into the year is like, is this like, why doesn't Hughes does all these great things? Why does he not have any points?
Yes.
If it was line mates, and it was also like just a kid still, like still kind of figuring out like where he is at his ceiling. And I guess the Devils see him like he's their star guy, and I guess we'll find out soon.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. It's going to be interesting to see them, I think, because they're like, I think last time I looked, 3 points out of a playoff spot, kind of like right on the edge there, which I think, you know, it's kind of about where you would have said for them, you know, so, and they have a lot of kind of good, useful little players. Like you could definitely see them sneaking into a wild card. And I mean, this has all been without, you know, Hughes. So I think they're kind of an interesting team to watch.
Yeah. It's also, they don't have a ton of big decisions to make as far as like who to keep though. Cause they just got Dougie Hamilton for a very long time, and they don't have to pay Mercer for a while.
Yeah.
And
they have Heischer locked up at this point too, right?
Yeah, they do. Yeah. So they have their two centers.
Yeah.
But it's just a matter of like, I guess that is a good question for like further down the line. Like, just like what exactly is the, what's the ceiling of like a core of Heischer, Hughes, Hamilton and Blackwood? Like, is that a playoff team? Is that a bubble team? Is that a team that's going to be in the top three every year? I don't know for sure, but Hamilton did a lot to change the complexion in Carolina, so we'll see what he does in New Jersey, because right now they're kind of in the same spot.
Yeah,
Carolina was in the first year they got Hamilton, at least at this point of the year. It's like they're up, they're down. They're not really a dominant team, but they're scoring more goals. They're in the mix, at least. They're not completely out of it, but they're not really as good as like maybe their fans hope yet. But still a really young team they have up there. They're figuring things out.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it would, if they could maybe find a taker for some big name defenseman contracts that are not Dougie Hamilton, you know, that might kind of clear things up for them a little bit. It's kind of a weird roster, you know, right? Like they have a lot of like good talent, and then they have some stuff that's not all that ideal, you know, in their lineup. So I don't know like kind of what I think about the Devils, and I don't know if the rest of the league even knows what to think about the Devils at this point. They're kind of an interesting team.
No, but they're always really tough to play usually, just because they're such a fast team. They're such a team. They're a team that attacks off the rush like all the time, and I feel like that's just always tough for teams to keep up with, especially in like the first period of games. Like it doesn't always it doesn't always result in anything for them, but it definitely gets teams on their heels a little bit. Be like, whoa, this team is a lot better than we thought they were, especially with the new schedule this year. Like Minnesota.
Yeah, like the Caps had a couple of games against them last year where I think they won like it was like 3-2 or something, and you're like, wow, like I were lucky to get the more goals than they did because they were flying up and down the ice. You know, it just didn't always result in goals.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of where Florida was a few years ago, when starting to kind of get good. It's like they're not there yet, but I could see them being like potentially what Florida is now, which is like a top team three, a top three team in the conference, like, and nobody really disputes that. So I can see them becoming that in another year or so.
Yeah, the top of that, just to kind of switch over back to Florida, and the top of the Atlantic Division, man, that is a brutal division right now, because, you know, the other question I was going to kind of ask you is, I'm curious if anyone else in the East has your eye, because right now it seems like much to my Twitter feed's chagrin, it's kind of the Toronto Maple Leafs world, and we're all living in it right now. So if you're Boston, it's gotta be tough, right? Because you got a lot of good games against some of these really good teams in the top of the division. But I don't know, Toronto, their underlings are pretty good. Obviously, Jack Campbell has been phenomenal for them. Like, I wonder, do you think they're legit? Do you think that, like, I mean, I think it's folly at this point to say they're going to be a second or third round team. I say what you will about their pedigree, but I just think that that's not the way to think about the playoffs. But I don't know, like they're really something now, huh?
Yeah, there's not really anything swaying me about Toronto, like being this paper tiger or anything. It's like it's what they were the last 2 years. This should be a team that we talk about as a team that goes deep in the playoffs. They got to get over that hump. And I don't know if it's going to happen this year or not, but I mean, I think they're a little better this year just because you got Sandin and Liljegren playing instead of Bogosian.
Yeah.
They've been getting by with Jake Muzzin hurt a lot too. And he was kind of like their, not
kind of the anchor for them.
Yeah. Not necessarily. Like, I think Morgan Riley's their best defenseman, but Muzzin's like their Dmitry Orlov, kind of the all situations guy. Then they're just getting a lot of production out of guys who they got off the scrap heap, like Michael Bunting and Andrei Kachka. Like, it's very cheap depth, and it's way more productive than what they were rolling with last year when they were shelling out first round picks for like Nick Foligno. And I'm trying to remember who else is on that roster last year, but they just
have like Wayne Simmonds, right? I think if I remember. And
yeah, like this guy Ilya Mikheyev,
who everyone seemed to like think he was going to be good, and then just like wasn't for whatever reason, you know?
Yeah, like he just gets like a million chances off the rush, and he scores maybe two of them. But now they got Andrei Kasha has been producing for them. Tavares has had a really good start to the year. A lot of people thought he was kind of toast last year, if I remember correctly. But everything's kind of just. Everything's kind of just blown out of proportion in Toronto, regardless of if they're good or bad. It's like Tavares has like a 50 something point year, and it's like, oh, he's done. Like, I don't know about that. Because a bunch of people, like, contract aside, a bunch of teams would be willing to take John Tavares off your hands.
Yeah, I think that is fair. I think they have a few players that, you know, if they were to, I think it's funny because I've heard that there's like a, I think it was like William Nylander. Everyone was like, oh, you know, cut the ball. I can't believe like he put.
Swear to God, like William Nylander could score 100 points, and there's still like people in Toronto that want him gone because he missed an assignment on the back check, or he just did something that pissed them off, like with the puck.
Or he dared try to use his leverage against a team that has most of the leverage the entire time, which is, I think, something that is still. It's like kind of silly. I get everyone wants to be a fan of ownership for whatever reason, but I always thought that was kind of silly.
Yeah, like I said, at this point, like I don't know if Toronto is better than Florida, but that's just because I've watched a lot of Florida, and I think I was about to say they're the best team in the league, but I don't know if I'm ready to go there yet. But I really, I just love how they play, and they got Bobrovsky actually playing good now, so that's something.
He's been incredible for them this year.
But the only thing I don't like about Florida is they fall behind a lot, and they're one of those teams where it kind of just snowballs for them. It's like when it's going good, it's good. But when it's going bad, it's like they let it snowball. Like one bad shift turns into two and they find themselves down like 2-1 in a game that they're dominating. It's kind of like Carolina a little bit.
Yeah. Well, as Florida Panthers being my unofficial number two team, this is very exciting. But you got Ekblad for the Norse this year? I mean, he's been incredible, no?
Yeah, but I mean, as of right now, I mean, him, maybe Adam Fox. There's other guys too that I think of. Like, it's like I think Miro Heiskanen is probably the best defenseman in the league in terms of like pure skill, but the results are just over there with him.
Sure.
And
do himself many favors playing in Dallas too.
Well, like even then, like I've been watching them the past week. Dallas is a team that just looks completely dead in the water for 10 games and then just rises and puts themselves back into the playoff conversation when they had no business being in it. But I don't know. Like he can control games better than most defensemen that I've seen. It's just that his passes go to like Luke Glendening or a guy that just flubs them or something, and it just never results in any offense. Back to Florida, like I've been more impressed with them than like any other team in the league, aside from maybe. I don't want to say, like, I guess Edmonton, but like Edmonton is a lot of McDavid and Draisaitl, but those are
the we kind of know what Edmonton is, right? You know.
Yeah, and Tampa Bay has been good. Tampa Bay is hurt, so I mean Tampa Bay is like probably like the undisputed king until somebody dethrones them, but they're also hurt right now.
Yeah, and they're also a team that, like, you know, it's kind of like you would think if there's a team that can kind of just sleepwalk through the regular season and just be like, look, let's just get in, who really cares, you know, Tampa Bay.
Yeah, I mean, they beat the hell out of, I can't remember who they beat, but it was, again, they didn't have Point, they didn't have Kucherov, and I think they didn't have Kucherov either, and they won that game 4-1. It might have been Seattle, so expansion team, whatever, but the Leafs.
Yeah, although they spotted, what was it? They were up 3-0 to the Blues last night, and then they lost in a shootout there. So, you know, they're
the Blues
it
are
just doesn't matter, I think, for them.
The like, Blues
they
are
know
a
where they're
going to
be. They're going to be a playoff team, right? You know, so
yeah.
Like, I think for them, they probably want to fast forward to April as much as anyone.
Yeah, definitely. I think Colorado's also in that group too. It's like Colorado's hurt, and Colorado, they have not been the dominant team that I kind of expected them to be, which I guess is fair because, I mean, they did lose. I guess all they did lose was Brandon Saad. I'm trying to remember who else left. I think Donskoy, like death pieces, but still. Like,
I lost Grubauer, although that seems like that was more
Kemper.
At this point.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Kemper's a good goalie.
Yeah, he is, as long
Colorado,
as he's
not. My problem with the Avs right now is they're beating up bad teams, and when they face a team that's just slightly above that, they just, like, they played Dallas the other night and got absolutely dominated in the first period.
Yeah, I actually caught a good piece of that game, and that was a weird kind of style of contrast game, and it just seemed like kind of Dallas, it seemed like they kind of flummoxed a little bit of whatever Colorado was trying to do, particularly kind of zone entry wise, you know, the Colorado, they're very dependent on entering with speed, and that just kind of Dallas, for whatever reason, seemed like they did a good job in that game to kind of
frustrate it a little bit. Yeah, it is kind of what Dallas does. The problem is that this only works for Dallas when they have a lead. They just haven't had a lot of leads this year because they have two players who can score goals. Well, three. They all play on the same line. And
yeah, when Roope Hintz isn't scoring or whatever.
Hintz, Robertson, and Pavelski.
Yeah, you know, they struggle.
Yeah, so I don't know, but Colorado could not get out of the zone cleanly in that first period, and they were down 3-0 at the end of it. And so it was just garbage time where they were just creating shots from the outside, and Ottinger just bailed out anything that was loose.
Yeah.
So I think they're going to figure it out. They don't have McKinnon right now, obviously. And he looked like a heart finalist when he was healthy.
Yeah.
So I guess the smart thing to do is probably wait till he comes back and just wait till the playoffs, because I have a feeling standing points wise are not going to matter that much this year. It's just going to be a who doesn't.
Yeah. I mean, particularly out West, right? You know, you look at it and you're like, I mean, particularly with Vegas and Colorado, maybe not, I don't know, like both struggling a little bit. You're like, all right, is there anyone really out West that like scares you? I guess like Edmonton maybe, but at the same time, I think we kind of know very much what their faults are and what they aren't. And, you know, so we'll see whether,
That's exactly it. The Oilers should scare you, but they also, they didn't win a single game in a series against the Winnipeg Jets last year. Nope. So.
No, they're 0-8, or well, including the bubble, I guess, right? What are they, like one playoff win in the last 3 years or something like that?
Yeah. Like, I mean, eventually that's got to change, just because like McDavid, there's been a lot. They haven't been in as many like laughers this year. Like they've had games where it's been tight and McDavid just pulls something out of his hat and wins it for them, like that game against the Jets and the Rangers a few weeks ago. So I think that might matter down the line, where it's like everything doesn't come as easy for them. They're less of a front-running team. So we'll see how that goes. And is Stuart Skinner going to be like their goalie in the playoffs? I don't know. That's how it is with the West, though. It's like, oh, I like this team, but it's like the Blues. I've been impressed with them a lot this year. They just don't win games.
Nope.
And that's kind of important.
Maybe we want to say the best team is like Calgary, I guess. Like, I don't know.
Yeah,
they're the one team I look at them like most nights and I'm like, oh, I'm impressed by what they're doing, you know?
Honestly, they're probably the most convincing case right now, if you want to say who's like the best team in the West. Like, the Oilers did beat them early in the season, but Calgary, they face inferior teams on the road and they just beat the hell out of them.
I caught the Boston game, right? And that was like maybe one of the more impressive, like just they just had things on lock. And I mean, Daryl, I think that there's an interesting parallel you could draw with the Caps, in the sense of you have a coach that is really, really good at doing one thing. And, you know, Daryl Sutter and I think Laviolette have a similarity in terms of being able to suppress like the other team's offense, right? And so you look at it, you're like, all right, like they can do that. And then, you know, you have a formula of that plus good shooting talent, which Washington clearly has. Calgary, you know, like they have enough kind of top end guys that you would think, although I don't know, it's like Mark, Giapani going to score a gazillion goals this year. I don't know about that, but yeah,
it helps that Johnny Gaudreau has been like maybe the third best player in the league this year.
Yeah, he's been unbelievable this year.
Yeah, he's like, in my zone entry stats, like he is where McDavid usually is.
Oh, wow.
Like, right corner in terms of like turning zone entries into scoring chances. He's been like far and away the best player. Well, McDavid's right behind him, but he's been the best player in the league in that category, which is kind of unheard of because that's usually 97's territory right there.
Yeah.
Still, he's just like they've been really good. Like, it's hard to really dispute that. And they have the secondary scoring on the line with Mangiapane, and I think Coleman's on that line.
Yep.
They move things.
That is a pickup that is a perfect Daryl Sutter pickup, is it not?
Yeah, the only thing I worry about with Calgary is that, like, the top of that roster, the first line is incredible. The second line really hasn't been producing that much. And the secondary scoring is kind of just Mangiapane and nobody else right now. But yeah. Just wonder when that dries up, are they going to be as terrifying as they are right now? I don't know, but they do have a goaltender, which that's going to go a long way, obviously.
They do, and they have a coach that I think is kind of designed to make goaltenders look good. My favorite is looking at Jonathan Quick stats with and without Daryl Sutter, because they are very, very different.
Yeah, and Markstrom, I think, is a better goalie than Jonathan Quick was. So
yeah, that's I don't know. You're gonna get some angry Kings fans. I don't know what are gonna be listening an hour plus into a Washington Capitals podcast, but if they are, you'll get some angry tweets there. Although I think it's interesting with goalies, because that's kind of been my thing on Japers Rank lately, is kind of been saying like maybe we actually don't know anything about goaltending anymore anyways. So
I mean, I just look at what Carolina did. They let Nedeljkovic go because they didn't, I guess they either didn't want to pay him or they just wanted a veteran goaltender. They get Freddie Anderson 2 months off an injury where it just seemed like he was never going to be healthy. And he's been, I think he's got like the third best save percentage in the league right now.
Yep. And we were all like going to write off Bob as being a $10 million disaster or whatever. And he's been probably your Vezina front runner at this point. So
yeah, it's been a strange season. It's kind of tough to get a gauge on. I mean, I know who the really bad teams are, but as far as like the elite great teams, it's kind of tough to what we started off the podcast with. There's just a lot of teams kind of in the same territory, which is why you're seeing so many like crazy games right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting, you know, because I think for the Caps, like we've kind of looked at this last little stretch as being like, oh, they're playing some really good teams. And, you know, I think that they've looked okay, you know, but you look at kind of the underlyings, particularly lately, and it's not been ideal, particularly kind of going into the third, you know, and both teams have had chances to make adjustments. And so, you know, I don't know what I think about the Caps. I mean, then again, like you would say, look, their entire second line is out right now. So maybe things are just a little weird and we kind of need things to settle, I think, as the year goes on.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, with Washington's case, like you have to be happy that they're doing more than treading water with guys and with basically an AHL second line.
Yep. With Beck Malenstein getting that.
Yeah, exactly. It's basically what Pittsburgh's been doing for the last decade or so.
Yep. And unlike Pittsburgh, the Caps, I think, are going to get some of their top guys back. So.
Yeah.
But, all right. Well, Corey, we're at, I think this is a new high for us. I think we're at 70 minutes. So this has been a blast. We always like having you come on. So where can people find you? And I know you're doing different Patreon stuff these days.
You can find all my stuff at All Three Zones. Sorry, my dogs are going crazy right now. But you can find me at allthreezones.com or at ShutdownLine on Twitter. All Three Zones has a link to my Patreon and all the stats that I collect, player cards, all sorts of things that I added this year for subscribers. And you can find my writing at McKean's Hockey. I'm going to do an article on the Caps this week just because I've enjoyed watching them. Pull out wins with this roster.
Yeah, I think we all have. So, all right. And if you like the show, please rate, drive, subscribe, review. I hope you like the show because, you know, it's been going on for a while, but it's always been a blast. And if you like the show, rate, drive, subscribe, review. You can follow the show at Japers Drink Radio. You can follow me at @GregY_. And next week we might have a big guest, or it might be String and I. And I think it's going to be exciting no matter what. So with that, stay tuned and look forward to talking to you next week. Thank you.